I want to talk about Jägermeister. Dad, what do you know about Jägermeister?
I mean, well, really, all I know, it's got a really awesome stag logo. What else do I need to know about Jägermeister?
Well, you should know that you've been drinking it all wrong this entire time.
Damn, that's cold. There's a right and wrong way to drink it?
Yes, there is, Dad. You should be drinking it ice cold, at 0 degrees Fahrenheit, to be exact.
Well, you know what? That explains a lot. I've just been pulling it straight off the shelf.
Oh, Dad, I'm so glad I got to you in time. No, that is entirely wrong. The only way to serve Jägermeister is ice cold. So wherever you're at, if you're hanging out with friends, or you're at the bar, or you're helping your dear sweet father try and get right, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York. Lots of things go better together. Hockey, food, golf, peanut butter and jelly, Gojo and Golic, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. What? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Gojo and Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Mike Golic Sr., Claudia Bellafato, all out here at the DraftKings studio in Boston as it is finally draft day. We made it here. Wandering across the sea of mock drafts for 40 days and 40 nights has finally spit us out on the other side. Sweet merciful Christ. We've got a great show for you guys. As always, make sure you download, subscribe, rate and review it. Leave us a 5-star rating. Check us out here live Monday through Friday from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern on the DraftKings Network. The best of Gojo and Golic from noon to 1 p.m. Eastern on VSIM, wherever you got that, on the radio. Jam-packed show. Great guest today. Claudia, what do we got coming up for the people?
And the best part of today, too, is everybody's just hammering those hot takes just in case they hit, because you never know.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up, Alt Rock, speaking of prospects, top tackle prospect, Joe Alt will join us in hour one. On the clock, Mina Kimes and Diana Russini in hour two. How did we get so lucky to land them both? And do you even lift, Spo? Yes. It is me. I am the reason that the Heat, even the series last night against the Celtics, I'm sorry. I'll take a gentleman's sweep, though, guys. We could have, you know, one is fine. But I really don't think they would have got it done. No, Jimmy, it was really me. I had to pep talk, Spo.
Yeah, so this was really interesting, is we all should have known around here, not any sort of insider information about what was going to go on with these lineups. The fact that the Miami Heat were just going to completely flip the script on how they have operated as a basketball team up until this point, to rain down threes and all of a sudden introduce that little specter of doubt into Boston Celtics fans' hearts that they really didn't need at this juncture. We'll get to all that, but how this got launched is the fact that not any of that insider information, but that Claudia Bellafato actually ran into and apparently worked out with Eric Spoelstra yesterday, almost full-blown.
Yep. It was like, hey.
How did this happen? Walk us through what the hell happened here with Spo.
Yeah, okay. So just joined Equinox. I'm not happy about it. It is so overpriced. But moments like this make it worth it.
Give her the membership
it's
for
fine.
Free.
Oh, man.
So I'm working out in the side room, and I look over. And I say, is that Spo? No way. They have a game today. Like, he's going to be at Equinox just chilling midday. It was. And I go over to the cable machine because it's leg day. And he's like, are you using this? Well, yeah, I'm putting the cable on the cable machine. So I am. But you can use it if you want. So he goes in. So we're both using the cable machine. And then I go over to use the hip thrust. And he said, are you using this? Yep, that's usually how it worked. You know, you put the plate on the thing. Yeah. Can I work in with you? Man, you can do whatever you want. You're one of the best coaches of all time. Come on in here. Let's do it. So we start working out together. I thought maybe he'd be throwing a few plates on there. We did 235s on both sides, and I have to say my form was better. And I wouldn't say that myself, but he admitted it. He was like, this is embarrassing. Your form's better than mine.
Form's better, and you were lifting the same weight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, at least he admitted it.
He did, yeah.
But listen, Spo's up there a little bit as someone currently nursing back problems in their mid-30s.
Rod, no shame.
Maybe it's a, you know what, but I would say it's about the technique, and it sounds like he wasn't clearing that bar either. Apparently, it focused all of his energies on this game plan then and only had so much to give in the weight room there.
Yeah, I mean, some people might say it was Tyler Hero, you know, making or assisting 16 of their threes, but I say no, it was me, because I said, Spo, as much respect I have for my Boston Celtics, I do think they'll win it all. the reason your team is a threat is because of you, Jimmy or not. And he was like, you're just blowing smoke. I'm like, no, for real. And what happens?
Boy, yeah, what happened? We're gonna get into that one. I like the other part of it, though. There's a basketball hoop there. Oh. And you said he and another coach went over and started watching guys hoop, and the guys saw him.
Oh, God.
And all of a sudden, they were bawling their minds out, weren't they?
Think YMCA hoops. The dudes are already trying to show up like they just came fresh, like they're walk-ons. These dudes acted like they were in a Miami Heat tryout.
Oh, they thought on the other side of this is the 10-day that's going to change their life.
Oh, my God.
He's like, Bo is going to see me jack up this shot. And be like, I need that, dude.
That is awesome.
That's Jimmy's replacement.
I was going to say, Johnny, tell you the accounting firm you're not coming in next week.
I got
the Miami Heat need you for this playoff run, bub.
Got a 10-day. Oh,
sweet Jesus.
All those players saw then the game last night and how well Miami did. They say, and Spo, watch me. I got a shot.
See, you know what this is going to do? An uptick in people roaming the gyms around NBA game sites. Because I do remember, like, when I was in Los Angeles doing work early on in my time at ESPN, the Mavericks were playing in town, and where we'd stay was right across from then Staples, now Crypto, and I'm in the weight room over at the JW Marriott, the gym weight room.
Yeah.
And I look and someone's knocking on the door because their key doesn't work. It's Mark Cuban. And so I'm like, all right, like surely letting Mark Cuban in here Shark Tank wise is going to get me at least some percentage in the valuation of whatever happens next. No, didn't say a word to me.
You just letting somebody in willy nilly without a key? I mean, that's
I felt like I could trust him based on that visual.
You should have on the other side been like, I have something you don't have.
What's it worth to you? I have an idea I want to run by you.
Exactly. I have a product I'd like to sell.
50%.
Exactly.
But Spo, good dude, right?
Spo, very good dude. Everybody was like, oh, was it? Yeah. I'm like, no, we were using the same machine. We were talking ball. It was very chill and cool experience. I'm not too proud to say that was cool. I don't get starstruck. I've worked with a lot of athletes, but great coaches like that. It's like if I met Belichick, it would just be, it'd be
plus,
different.
There was no expect. You didn't expect to see him there. It was a shock.
Definitely didn't expect that.
All right, there you go. Yeah. Shout out. Spo had quite a day. We will get into the rest of the day that Miami Heat had there.
Shocker.
But it is also draft day around here, and we've been building up to this all week. Like Claudia said, pumped to have Mina Kimes on with us, who's out in Detroit now covering the draft for ESPN. Diane Rossini and the great job she's done at The Athletic. Some draft rumblings that came out yesterday. We'll sift through those and figure out what she's still buying now, just hours away from the NFL draft. Joe Alt, certainly a guy who's going to hear his name called in the top 10, although some interesting shuffling in the offensive tackle market
that
we can get to here. But, Dad, we were talking before the show. What a far cry this is now, where the draft has become this barnstorming phenomenon around the NFL. When back in the day, I didn't realize your draft in 1985 was on Tuesday and Wednesday, and you got the call at midnight that you were going on to your NFL dream.
Yeah, it was from 1936 to 1987. The draft was on a Tuesday and a Wednesday. And I think my draft, I wasn't there. I think it was in New York. And so Tuesday and Wednesday, I got the call Wednesday night, midnight or a little before midnight. That was the 10th round. They still had two more rounds to go. I think at that point you got 5 minutes, but it probably took 30 seconds for some teams to pick at that point. But yeah, so it was Tuesday, Wednesday. My brother Bob, who was playing in the league at that point, brought up a bunch of beer and we were just going to kind of hang out. We had a lot of time to hang out from the start of the draft through Tuesday. Tuesday night, Wednesday through the draft.
Your
all the
BAC
way to the
had to look like one of those win probability charts on ESPN.com, just going back and forth in a close game.
Luckily, I went nowhere. So I went, you know, got a little tipsy, got a little hungover, got a little tipsy, got a little hungover. I had the ups and downs.
A lot of hairs of the dog.
Until I got that call from the Houston Oilers, you youngsters out there, the Houston Oilers, not the Tennessee Titans, that I was their 10th round selection. So It was a cool moment. It was a very, very cool moment, no doubt about that. But all these guys that are getting ready to live their dream, getting ready. And I would say we talk so much about the first-round guys and all the names we talked about over and over and over and over again. But, man, it doesn't matter. You get drafted. You were an undrafted free agent. As I've always said, it being first-round, great second-round, that's all cool. But just getting issued shoulder pads and a helmet and getting a chance, that's the thing. So don't get bummed if you don't go where you think you're going to go or don't go at all. If you then get to sign with the team, if you get a chance to put that uniform on, you get a chance to show something and try and make your dream come true.
That being said, I do recommend being a first rounder.
Yes,
if you've got
yes,
the ability
yes,
to. Yes. It is a much better way to go about entering your NFL life than being an undrafted free agent, where when you show up to rookie minicamp in the offseason program and you see you and another guy have the exact same number, and everyone's like, well, one of y'all ain't going to be here. And have that realization that immediately becomes the dog-eat-dog world at that next level. That becomes a lot easier when you've got that one next to your name. So for the fellows that are getting ready to experience that tonight, congratulations. Yep. It is a life-changing sum of money, even in this new world of the collective bargaining agreement, and it is an incredible opportunity to go live out the dream that we are very excited for here.
You should still be proud, though. It's just crazy to get on a roster in general, right?
Listen, so it was an awesome experience.
Yes.
Like, I am tremendously thankful for it. I got to meet a lot of great people, and I got to see up close what it takes for these guys, the veterans around the NFL, the guys who have made this their livelihood, to sustain at that point, to get to look at the work up close and to see the way that these guys and some of these organizations operated was an invaluable experience from the months of like April until the beginning of September. great time
good
there.
Journey.
Really get to know the city in the summer. Not when you're busy with all that in-season stuff there. Waste everybody's time. So as we look ahead to the draft tonight, Claudia mentioned it. It's our last chance to get some of the hot takes out. At some point, we're going to have to revisit the take box in there, our time capsule.
In the wine box.
Yeah, God.
Why, Koji, why, you knew that was
the
coming.
Every
time, you can't just suspend disbelief with us. You know, so for some people, this is an audio medium, and so they might not know.
All right.
It is a wine box, but it's our time capsule. There we go.
Well, when I say wine box, I don't know exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah,
they can picture what a wine box looks like.
At this point, they will know, but we're getting some takes in there. We also want to get the last-minute draft takes out here. So, Claudia, we're taking a look at DraftKings Sportsbook. We've got our pick'em pool that people can enter on the DraftKings Sportsbook right now with a chance to win $1,000 in bonus bets right now. You go on there, the Gojo and Golic pick'em pool there. We've got a bunch of these draft props up that people can take a look at here. So why don't we run through some of them and get out our last bit of hot takes here before the night starts?
Yeah, so this first market we're looking at is sort of the opposite of hot takes, because we're talking about the top three exact order, which we have been talking about. Caleb Williams minus 20,000. The reason, you might be asking, why would I approach a market like this? It's to bring the juice down. So instead of betting Caleb Williams at minus 20,000 at number one, number two to go to Jaden Daniels, now minus 1,000. Keep in mind, that was close to even money between him and Drake May, now minus 1,000. Or number three, Drake May, minus 240. You can basically parlay those together. It was minus 175 before the show. I just looked at the updated number, minus 235.
Wow.
So people were quick to run to that. Now, again, this is just one of the markets. We have several at the DraftKings Sportsbook. And I guess I was going to ask you guys if that's a bet you would make, but now at minus 235, I don't see a ton of value. Do you think that's correct, though, to be steamed at the, do you think 1, 2, 3 is set in stone?
So I think that's the right order in my mind. Now, I would still have Drake May as the second quarterback. Like, if I was picking this draft, I would be drafting Drake May second overall. I think there was a strong argument for him and Caleb Williams to have a little bit more of a back and forth at one, but I think ultimately that willed out the right way. That being said, it's hard to ignore the steam there is around there now. If you were looking for one that's got a little bit of wild card value, the one right behind it, plus 185 of Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and J.J. McCarthy, just because of how weird and noisy J.J.'s been in this entire pre-draft process, could be an interesting one. But I do think at the end of the day, we're going to see Caleb Williams go to the Bears. We're going to see Jaden Daniels go to the Washington Commanders. And then the Patriots sitting there at three, Drake May, I think that is a coup for them.
I do as well. And a lot of talk, I think, because we're so stuck in our head, the old regime of the New England Patriots with Bill Belichick, that they're the movers and the shakers all the time.
Sure.
But this is a new regime. They need a quarterback. And I think I agree with you. I think this is the order that it's going to be, Drake May being third. Then, to me, it gets interesting with J.J. McCarthy, because we've had so many thoughts of trading up to get him. But what if he goes, what if Minnesota, that's the team most talked about, moving up, what if they stay where they are and end up getting a J.J. McCarthy? Because we're so in tune now with thinking they're going to trade up. J.J. McCarthy, we go all the way back to the end of the season when the first mocks started coming out. We were seeing J.J. even in the first round at like 11 and 12. You and I were both like, really? We don't really kind of see it. But now we've been so fed into that
Minnesota may trade up to get him in the top five.
It's funny. I think that this is kind of like in contract negotiations when a huge number gets leaked and then ultimately what you settle on feels like a bargain.
Right.
Where I just saw Trevor Sycamore, our buddy over at Pro Football Focus, put out his last predictive mock, had the Vikings staying at 11 and taking J.J. McCarthy. And man, how funny it would be if after all this draft cycle where we've had him built up to be, oh, he's the top quarterback, he can be taken in the top four. If Minnesota got him at 11, the collective feel would be, oh, what a bargain for them.
They didn't have to trade up.
When in actuality, it's probably still overdrafted relative to what we originally thought. Claudia, that does lead to the market, though, on total quarterbacks taken in the first round, which I think could be pretty interesting.
Yep. So if you can think of all of the players, what number do you get to? Is it six or more senior? Because if so, you can bet that at plus 180 first round.
So that's the record, just to give a little history here. 1983. It was six quarterbacks in the first round in order: John Elway, Todd Blackledge, Jim Kelly, Tony Eason, Ken O'Brien, Dan Marino. That was within pick 1 to 28, six quarterbacks went. That's the record. So I think five go for sure. I think five go for sure. I think Penix is the fifth. There is part of me, what's the number on that?
So this is 6+. The total quarterbacks first round over 4.5 is minus 400. So this is giving you plus money. So the 5 is expected.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So I'm tempted to go 6. I'm tempted just because the quarterback can be so overvalued that someone, I think Bo Nix would be that 6th one and has a shot to go in the first round.
I think we have a better chance of getting 4 than 6. I think we have a better chance of it stopping with J.J. McCarthy than we do it getting to Bo Nix. I have so much of Will Levis from last year stuck in my head, where we were all so convinced this was going to be a top 10 quarterback because of the offense he played in, because of the arm strength, because of all the physical traits and skills. And while it's different evals for the quarterbacks we're talking about, right? Bo Nix, less of the physical ability, huge body of work we talked to yesterday. Michael Penix Jr., incredible tape, big-time numbers, big-time production. Injury concerns are the risk, but I think ultimately some of those same things could be what drives a lot of this conversation and actually has teams say, hey, we can hold pat and probably get these guys back in the second round. So I think we've got a better chance of 4 than 6.
Okay, I'll say a better chance of 6 than 4.
And I will say the Patriots, I don't know what they're trying to do to us, but they posted something about Christian Gonzalez last night saying drafting a duck, which I know he went to Oregon.
Yeah.
Now everybody's like, does that mean Bo Nix? I'm like, please tell me that doesn't mean Bo Nix. Just take trade
back. Maybe trade back. Maybe they'll trade back.
I get it. Yeah, and still to get a good quarterback
possible.
And other pieces. It is possible. All right, let's talk about something that you want to go, Joe. How many linemen will go in round 1? Over 9.5. Juiced minus 180. Do we see any value going under? So
is
9 or less at plus 140.
Is this all linemen or all linemen?
Round one. Yeah, all linemen.
All linemen in round 1.
This is easily over 9.
Oh, total offensive linemen selected in round 1.
Yep.
Oh, this is total offensive linemen.
Yeah, total offensive linemen selected in round 1.
Okay, I think it's over 9.5.
I do too. Yep. Like, I just think this year it seems to be so many. The biggest difference this year is you've got incredibly talented guys. You've got a bunch of tackles, which is usually the sexy thing. Like, we were going back and looking at our draft classes. I wasn't drafted, so I'm technically a part of it. But, like, the 2013 NFL draft class, 3 of the top 4 picks were tackles.
Yeah.
We've seen years where there's been a run. This year has got a lot of that potential to it. But there's also interior guys. We don't know. Jackson Powers Johnson could sneak in there. It seems like he's fallen a little bit. But you've got him. You've got the rise of Graham Barton, who I've seen mocked to the Pittsburgh Steelers at 20 a bunch lately. So guys like that, Guyton, Jordan Morgan, who we talked to the other day, Amarius Mims, there are so many big-time guys that I think are ultimately going to bleed up into that first round. I would go over on that. I think 10's the magic number. I do think it's going to end up being 10 offensive linemen that go in that first round. Shout out to whoever went over the mock yesterday and put in Pro Football Focus an entire 32-team NFL O-line only first round mock. That is the world I want to live in.
Huh?
That's your kind of article. All right, so we all seem to agree on with the market there. Like I said, juice minus 180 to the over. So what about J.J. McCarthy? We talked about him a little bit. To be selected by which team is a market at DraftKings Sportsbook? The Vikings, the favorite at plus 150, but the Patriots are plus 160, only a 10 cents difference, which means the books don't really know. Nobody really knows until draft day, which is today. So, Senior, what do you think? McCarthy to the Patriots, or do you see it being a Vikings?
No, I don't see him to the Patriots. To me, it's going to be the Vikings, but where do they get him? Because you sit there and look at the top 3, they need quarterbacks. If the Patriots take Drake May, Cardinals don't need a quarterback, Chargers don't, and I'm not putting trades in there. You just look at the next group. They don't need a quarterback. There's rumblings of the Giants, but they're not taking a quarterback at six. Tennessee doesn't need one. Atlanta doesn't need one. Chicago will have drafted Caleb Williams. The Jets don't need one. So Minnesota, their only fear would be, does someone jump ahead of them who wants a quarterback to grab J.J. McCarthy? Or do they say, you know what, we're going to stand pat here because we feel we can get him here? Or do we, are we looking over our shoulder and that object is closer than it really seems, that there's a team that might jump us to get J.J. McCarthy?
I think getting plus money on the Vikings is a pretty big win. Like, we've talked about the quarterback order being something that, you know, the markets we looked at before, a lot of juice their way on that. I think getting plus money on the Vikings is a pretty big win at plus 150. It just seems like there's been too much smoke for there not to be fire. And one way or another, it seems like the Vikings are a desperate enough team, given their station right now in the NFC North, where they not only make this move, but I think have to make this move. We've talked about the Raiders, you know, plus 1,500 there, could be desperate in the quarterback market also. The Broncos at plus 340. But I think the Vikings have the capital to make this work no matter what.
Quick question backing off of that. J.J. McCarthy's plus 380 to go number four. Do you see any scenario where somebody trades up to get him at four? Marvin Harrison Jr. is the favorite at four.
Yeah, I think that's a very realistic possibility. But more realistic possibility is that beef remains high on the menu. We'll talk to some of the best in Joe Alt next. I want to talk about Jägermeister. Dad, what do you know about Jägermeister?
I mean, well, really, all I know, it's got a really awesome stag logo. What else do I need to know about Jägermeister?
Well, you should know that you've been drinking it all wrong this entire time.
Damn, that's cold. There's a right and wrong way to drink it?
Yes, there is, Dad. You should be drinking it ice cold at 0 degrees Fahrenheit, to be exact.
Well, you know what? That explains a lot. I've just been pulling it straight off the shelf.
Oh, Dad, I'm so glad I got to you in time. No, that is entirely wrong. The only way to serve Jägermeister is ice cold. So wherever you're at, if you're hanging out with friends or you're at the bar or you're helping your dear sweet father try and get right, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York.
Draft day finally here, and excited to talk to a guy whose name's going to come off the board very early,
guy that we are very familiar with, got to watch every snap of his career at Notre Dame, former All-American offensive tackle, Joe Alt, kind enough to join us now. We're excited to hear about his work with Tide, along with P&G and Meyer, as he gets set for draft night. But Joe, man, congratulations on a stellar college career. What's this been like? You play one of the most anonymous positions in sport, an offensive line. You've been the center of attention now leading up this entire draft cycle. So how has that been for you, being out in the light as an offensive lineman?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's nice. I'm not going to say I don't like it. It is a little weird when you're sitting down at Applebee's with your girlfriend, you see your face on the TV. You're like, that's a little weird. But, you know, it's been super exciting. The draft process for me has been, you know, very easy, and I've been able to stay in kind of my routine. So I've been pretty grateful for how it's gone so far.
You're a guy that makes me feel old because I played against your father when he was with the Chiefs and I was with the Eagles. But also, is there that little bit of competition, which, by the way, you're going to blow away. He was a first-round 21st pick. You're going to go well before that. So is there going to be a little smack talk when you get picked before he did?
I wish I could give him some smack talk, but I'm just so grateful for my father and what he's done for me, what he's taught for me. I mean, I wouldn't be in the spot I am without him. So, no, I won't be giving him any smack talk. It'll just be all, you know, gratitude and appreciation for what he's done for me.
You hear that?
All right, so you're putting me in a really bad position right now, Joe, because I've spent an entire life, and I wanted to ask you, I obviously, like you, was fortunate to have my dad as an NFL player, played at Notre Dame where I wanted to go, and every step along the way, he's trying to interject his advice and trying to offer is your dad someone that you've gone to for advice, or has he been there every step of the way just trying to tell you how to do this stuff?
There's a little bit of both. You know, they're naturally going to be both. Sometimes you don't want to hear it. You know, there's some comments there. I think there's a couple of games this year I've walked down. He goes, you got to go back to run blocking school 101. I'm like, wow, I didn't think it was that bad in the game. But, you know, overall, I'm always really appreciative of what he's done for me.
All I got to say is both of you, you're going to understand one day when you have kids of your own, you're going to get it. But away from that, Joe, talk about this process for you. how it changes from football to preparing and doing all these non-football things and now getting back to football again. How has this process gone for you?
Yeah, so I was able to do it here in Minnesota where I'm from, which was super great for me because I just kind of had a routine built in where I felt comfortable. I was sleeping in my childhood bed and things like that. But we were able to really continue to focus on football, which was great for me. I was spending about 2.5 hours doing the running, lifting stuff, you know, preparing for the 225 test, preparing for the 40, the pro agility, the L drill. But then I also got an hour of just straight football, what I needed to improve on from last year. And you know, I gave a lot of credit and really appreciative of, you know, the guys I trained with, Bill Welly and Alex Boone. It was a great process for me. And I felt like I really made the most of it.
What have you focused on in this process? I know sitting out here as, you know, the Notre Dame guy in the media, I get asked about you a lot, and people have always come and they're like, oh, their questions about, is he the most violent hand striker in the world or things like that. When you hear these kind of criticisms, what do you look at and think people are getting wrong? And what have you actually looked at and said, yeah, these are areas I want to improve on?
Yeah, I think the first thing is I always want to improve my strike. I think being able to have a very physical and violent strike without getting out of position is one of the most the best trait to have as an offensive lineman. One of those things that I kind of disagree with is people think I'm not a very like aggressive player. I might be like a timid player, but I have, you know, very severe controlled aggression. Like it's when that whistle, you know, the snap is had and before the whistle, it is full throttle as hard as I can. I'm trying to, you know, beat my man and not let him get the job done. You know, I'm pretty aggressive when I'm playing, but the thing I want to improve on is always my strike.
I know when Mike was at Notre Dame, he went through multiple O-line coaches. You did the same thing as well. How was that process, learning from different O-line coaches?
Yeah, obviously you got to get used to change. It's a little tough. You know, there's like kind of that, you know, the 2-week window I always thought where it's like kind of getting used to how he coaches, what his style is. But then from there, things that I was able to take from 3 different coaches and their different coaching styles and be able to kind of, you know, add to my mental game moving forward. So whatever kind of coach I get, at least I have somewhat of an experience with a certain kind of offensive line coach.
It's one of the things you guys also have in common. Mike was coached by Harry Hiestand as well, and I think he's one of the best O-line coaches I've ever seen. But did he scare you at times?
Yeah, you know, there was it was kind of like this, there's this kind of soft way getting into it where it was when he showed up, we were in offseason, the winter offseason, you're kind of like get to meet him, you have a couple of meetings, but there's nothing really to watch yet because he can't really yell at you. And then it was like the first spring ball practice, you come in, you're like, okay, this is a bit different than what I'm used to. We're going to have to take a minute to kind of adapt to what I'm getting yelled at for. But, you know, like you said, I think he's one of the best out there and really helped me improve my game.
Who are some of the guys that you watched that you said, wow, that's a guy, you know, I want to get to that league and this is a guy, boy, I love watching play.
Yeah, I think the first guy is always Joe Thomas. I think what he's able to do at the offensive tackle position is very, very special. And then more recently, I really began to watch Lane Johnson. And, you know, he's a freak of nature and athletic ability, so I don't really watch how he does things. It's more his mental approach to the game. So I think those are two guys that I've really kind of, you know, admired and watched their game.
Usually guys in your position who are, you know, consensus All-Americans, what you've done over on the left side, it doesn't come up as much, the idea of changing positions, but I know there are some teams, if the Los Angeles Chargers were to be in the mix there, the right tackle spot's open there. You did some work on the right side doing tackle over stuff, the NC State game, the Ohio State game this last year. Is that something you've continued to work on now in the lead up to the NFL draft? Where would you be at on the notion of playing over on the right-hand side versus the left-hand side where you've called home?
Yeah, obviously, I'm more comfortable left. I've had, you know, in-game snaps there. And I played a lot there, and that's, you know, where I'm more comfortable naturally. But I've also done a lot of preparation for right tackle in case that is the, you know, the next opportunity at the next level. So I've taken the time to make sure, you know, I can get some more comfortability and, you know, more reps on the right side so I'm available to go there if that's where the team needs me to be.
And what's the biggest difference? I always try and explain to people, that's not an easy process to try and go through, to try and switch everything you do there. So how can you kind of emphasize just how difficult that transition is for people that just look at it and think, oh, you're just left tackle, right tackle, what's the big deal?
Yeah, the thing for me that was the biggest is just how you have a different way your body works. Like my body naturally sits into my right side, that's where I push from, and my left side is my catch leg. And now you're flipping that completely. So you naturally, as you're setting, your body kind of wants to drip to that stronger push leg, but now that's the outside leg. You don't want your weight on the outside foot. So it's little things like that where you kind of, you don't really see it unless you film yourself and you catch yourself like, whoa, my body's, you know, shifted over when it should be here. And little things like that are things that I've noticed and tried to work on.
So, Joe, we know you've got a lot going on in the lead up to the draft, but you're here on behalf of some of your work that you're doing with Tide, P&G, and Meyer. What can you tell us about what you got going on with them heading into draft night and this life-changing day for you?
Yeah, with the new team and the new city coming up, I partnered with Meyer and P&G because they have the essentials I need, ready for really truly ready for anything. And you know, I'd always grown up being a Tide kid. My mom always, you know, I remember sitting on top of the laundry machine, and I'd walk in there, and there's the Tide ready to go, and you know, I'd take my sweaty basketball jersey or my sweaty football gear and drop it there, and you know, I'd get it back the next day, and it was always ready to go. So you know, that's something that's important to me. And then with Meijer, obviously being a Notre Dame kid, there's a Meijer right down the road. So I was out, I attended there, got my groceries from there. So a little discount for all my Meijer fans like me, who I was, you know, you can use M Perks and save $15 on purchase of $50 or more of P&G products. So, you know, that's kind of why I chose to do this and partner with them, because it's something that I've always used and, you know, have a special place in my heart for.
Good for you, doing a great job for them. I'm sure that will continue. And you mentioned your mom, we talked about your dad, so let's talk about draft day. You mentioned Joe Thomas. Unless you're going out fishing like Joe Thomas did that day, if you are, cool. If you're not, what are you going to be doing on draft day?
Yeah, you know, originally it was, I didn't even know Joe Thomas did that, but that was my plan. I literally wanted to be sitting on the dock with my dad, putting a line in. I kind of got vetoed a little bit by my mom. She said that's a little bit, you know, too out there. And I was like, all right, mom. So we're doing a like a vineyard slash bar, like 10 minutes from my house, where I can have, you know, all the fan members who have supported me and are super close to me, my close family and friends there. And it should be a great night. And just kind of the biggest thing for me is just showing my gratitude to those who have helped me become the person and player I am today and have them close to me.
There's going to be great joy in that day, but will there be a little bit of relief that this process is over and you can get back to playing football?
Definitely. I think the thing for me that I really am looking forward to is this waiting period being over. I can now begin to really dive into something, dive into a new playbook, dive into a coaching style, what, you know, what that coach wants me to do, how they want me to, you know, basic things, just so I can get a little feel for, you know, what this next summer is going to look like and really begin to put my work with a specific intention in mind is what I'm most excited for.
Well, I know whatever fan base hears your name called is going to be very excited to see all of that on display for their team. Joe, we appreciate the time, man. It's been a ton of fun watching your career at Notre Dame. We appreciate everything you did for the university, man. Best of luck. We're rooting for you, and enjoy draft night, brother.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. And now that the Boston Celtics have slayed the boogeyman in the Miami Heat, Boston fans, we feel a little bit more confident about the situation. You can decide right now, and if you're new to DraftKings, you can also check this out. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code GOJO. That's code GOJO for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. That's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Back, our thanks to our buddy Joe Alt for stopping by here. And Dad, he's becoming a really interesting player in this draft, looking around and reading between the betting markets and a lot of the mock drafts we're seeing this morning. A guy that for so long seemed to be a lock for the first tackle off the board now is a little bit healthy competition.
So let me ask you about this, because you know, we sit there and talk about if you go from the left side to the right side or right side to the left side, I don't think people really understand how difficult that can be. You certainly can do it. And you even heard Joe say he's been working on both sides. And during his career, he's played a little bit on the right in some of the over situations. So some of the talk now, because if he does go to the Chargers, they have Rashawn Slater at left tackle.
Yeah.
So Joe would probably be on the right side. J.C. Latham from Alabama was a right tackle, played right tackle. So we're starting to hear his name possibly with the Chargers. Is that something you would do because he has right tackle experience, or would you trust Joe could make that switch and he's the better lineman?
I would trust Joe personally. I just would take the best player available. And we talked to Duke Mannyweather about this the other day, who trains these guys, gets them ready for the next level and trains the guys that are in the pros. And he said it's on an individual basis, and he believes that a guy like Joe has the ability to make that sort of transition. But I can understand for some teams, especially ones like the Chargers, who I'm sure are looking for him to hit the ground running early right. on, having a guy you can put over there. And listen, J.C. Latham as a player is a guy, Lance Zierlein, who does a great job covering the draft, has had J.C. Latham as his top tackle for a lot of this draft process. So there's some people that just think, hey, with the size, the lower body mass that he has, certainly coming from a program like Alabama, there's a lot to like there. I would still pick Joe Alt with that pick if I'm going to go offensive line as the Chargers at five. But J.C. Latham, this smoke and this steam has kind of been building for a while, so not surprised to see he's the betting favorite now to go at five.
Yeah, because a lot of these linemen, especially get picked in the first round, are going to be plug and play, so they want them to be ready to go.
And
right
it is
away.
A difficult transition. When we hear Joe talk about it, you're having to rewire everything, how you organize your weight pre-snap, how you think. You have to start thinking about doing stuff again. And for a guy who's been on the left side his whole career like that, you've got all that stuff down, most of that second nature. It's like I talked about as a center, snapping the football. You want to make that something you don't think about. Most of those movements, you rep them so much in an unnatural position like offensive line, so it becomes second nature, so that when you get into these game situations, you're worried about, all right, how do we see the defense? How do we adjust to that? Not just how do I get out of my stance the most efficiently to shift my weight from one side to the other? All these things that you've got to retrain when you're going from left to right or inside to out.
All right, we're just hours away from finding that out. But Claudia, last night, your workout partner's team really got it going right here in against your team.
I can't say I'm surprised. She seemed pretty cool, calm, and collected, even though everybody came up saying, we hope you lose. But as I said, you can't doubt Spo. And it's funny because I think coaching had a lot to do with this. They saw what worked for the Celtics, and it was jacking up threes, hitting the majority of them. And they took note and did exactly that. They hit over 53% from the arc. A lot of that had to do because of Tyler Hero. He either made or assisted 16 of those threes. He had 24 and 14 assists. Celtics actually outscored them in the paint, so that's where they showed up, 46-26. But when you hit double the threes, you're likely going to win the game. Porzingis didn't have much of a play in this game either, which hurt them. So, yeah, he took one. They go back home now for two. As you always say, senior, you try to get one on the road.
Yep.
That's the goal, and that's what they did. At the beginning of the series, I said, it's a sweep or nothing. Anything else would be disappointing. That's not what we're getting. I'll take it, gentlemen.
So is this a nervy thing for you Celtic fans?
Because
this is what we talked about,
this
right?
This goes to Chris.
Best record, get into playoffs, and then.
Well, that is the issue because we saw this through the regular season, this season and last season, failing to teams that they should be dominating.
Right.
And I know that Tyler Hero is going to have games like that. I said that at the beginning of this tournament. That is sort of the dangerous factor. You have other guys that you don't expect. They don't have a ton of depth, but they do have guys who can go off. It doesn't worry me too much, though, because you just tighten up the defense. I don't know if Tyler Hero is going to go off and have a game like that again. Jimmy not being there is just
huge. Yeah, so still no Jimmy Butler.
To your point about Tyler Hero, scored 11 points on 13 shots in the opener, had 24 points on 13 shots, including 6 threes and 14 assists. The 14 assists was the outlier.
Yep.
Second most in a game for him in his career, obviously that. But this Miami team, they're a Bogart. Like, I don't know how many Harry Potter fans we have here, but shape-shifting monster who becomes your worst fear anytime you open the door. They are able to morph into whatever they need to be. Like that turnaround, they went from attempting a 38% of their points came from three in the first game.
Right.
62% of their points came from three.
To an NBA playoff record.
An NBA playoff record. So the fact that in one game they could say, you know what, we're a little bit undermanned right now. The way Boston has played us, giving us those shots on the outside, we just got to let them fly. To have a team that mentally can respond like that is a testament to Eric Spoelstra and the environment they've built. Like all that Heat culture stuff, I'm sure the Levitard show is famous. I'm sure the local hour this morning, Jeremy Tache had to be in his glory. There is no doubt. But the culture is, Dad, having players believe, hey, we're just going to go out here and let it fly. You have nothing to lose in this position. And so now the thing I do worry about, Claudia and Dad, for going out beyond this is, How much do you overcorrect now if you're Boston? Like, how much do you start? Because the Heat played them out at the three-point line and said, we're going to play you off that. We're going to try and get you to drive and take two. And win the math problem, how much do you adjust if you're the Boston Celtics, where you say, hey, do we play out a little bit further than we were before? Do we over-index for that, knowing that's not how the Miami Heat want to live, and risk it happening again?
See, I don't, because this, I don't know if we have odds on this type of thing, you know, in your world, Claudia, of can they do this? They're not doing this again. Miami's not hitting 62% from threes again. They're not doing that again.
No, so, but my point is they don't have to do that.
No, no. That's why if I'm Boston, I'm not all of a sudden just guarding the perimeter and saying I'm stopping them from doing it.
Oh, no.
I want to see how they go, see if they're hitting their shots again, because, as I said, they broke their own team record in the playoffs, which in 2021 they hit 20 against, I think it was the Bucks in the first round. They're not going to hit this many threes again.
I get that they're not going to, but, Dad, this is like when an offense puts a reverse on tape or puts a trick play in based
off
the formation
right.
they use all the time. Now you at least have to respect it. Mm-hmm. Because while I am comfortable in saying they're not going to score 62% of their points from three again and set another franchise postseason record in this series, but now all of a sudden if they hit a few and they have another stretch like they had in the third quarter of this game, and you're the Boston Celtics, who already have a little bit of the worries when it comes to your identity at the end of games, now how are you responding defensively in the area that's supposed to be this part that you have locked down?
The trend more that I look at and say, well, maybe we should have seen this coming, is the fact that Spoelstra is now 10-3 on games after a game one loss.
Yep.
Coming back and winning game two. The only one with a better winning percentage is Frank Vogel at 8-2. So Spo is used to doing this.
Yeah, yeah. To answer your question, too, I guess to both of you on if they're going to do it again, I'm looking back at that game one log, and they actually dominated in the paint that he did, and that was a big game for Adebayo. So that's where the fear comes from, and can they do it again? Can they get another win going back home?
And
if they can take a little bit from the three-point and take a little bit from what they did in game one and have the combination, and KP doesn't show up for the Celtics and Tatum doesn't show up as he should, then, yeah, they're going to get another win.
I was going to say, I could see the Heat. I still think Boston wins this series. I could see the Heat winning another game just because the biggest surprise, and you mentioned it through the first couple of games, has been Kristaps. Like, the first game, he shot so well from three, it didn't really matter. But you quietly saw Bam Adebayo kind of own the paint. And in this second game, Bam Adebayo from, like, 12 feet and in was money with a lot of floaters and touch shots there. Mm-hmm. But him rebounding, they got KP into some foul trouble there. And so all of this adding up to Bam showing up in a way inside, that was supposed to be the difference, right? Kristaps' game and his whole thing this offseason was, hey, I'm not just going to be the unicorn on the outside. I'm going to give Boston post touches in a way that helps flip what people had normally prepared for with that.
We're spending most of our time on that game. We'll give the other game just a minute of love. But it was a blowout, a 32-point win for Oklahoma City. They hold on the home court as it goes now to New Orleans. Still no Zion Williamson. Your second-leading scorer still doesn't get it done. In this game, and Brandon Ingram, he's held, I think, 10 points, I think it was, in that area there. Chet Holmgren, he goes 5 of 5 from threes in the first quarter, ends up with 26.7 rebounds, and SGA is playing fantastic.
I want to give some love to that Oklahoma City crowd, because while everyone's going to focus on the shots of Boston fans leaving with a minute left at the end of this game here, that Oklahoma City crowd, a full-blown whiteout in there, was an absolute roar from the opening tip all the way through. And, Dad, this team, the crowd, none of them ever let their foot off the gas in this game. It was almost a blowout from the jump here. Really complete, fun, young team, and exciting one to watch as the postseason rolls along for them. Coming up next, though, we roll along to the NFL, and our draft preview heads to the north, where some money is coming out.
Detroit Lions made some moves to secure two of their best current players ahead of adding new ones tonight. They agreed to a 4-year, $120 million extension with wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown and a 4-year, $112 million deal with offensive tackle Penei Sewell. St. Brown's contract includes $77 million guaranteed, the most guaranteed money for a wide receiver in a single contract in NFL history. Sewell's contract, $85 million guaranteed, the most for an O-lineman. So these dudes getting paid ahead of the season. Gojo.
Penei Sewell is 23 years old.
I mean,
crazy.
That, like, we've talked about some of the young guys coming out in this draft. The fact that he is 23 years old and is already an accomplished all-pro caliber player and they got to invest in like this, that guy's going to make so much money in his career. And right now, Dad is on gold jacket trend and shows no signs of slowing down.
A couple days to show, you did a radio hit, and I did one yesterday on the same station. And just to rip you as an O-lineman and me a D-lineman, I gave the O-line are the worst athletes on the field, blah, 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 blah. O-linemen, the athletic ability of them over the years, it has really been impressive. And this guy is right about at the top of the heap with his athletic ability.
Prime Trent Williams has probably been one of the best modern O-line athletes. We talked with Joe Alt about Lane Johnson in Philadelphia, too. I'd put Panay up at his size against anyone. That is one of the most fluid movers and insane body types I have ever seen. So to lock him down for the duration there, listen, I'm not going to go back and totally re-legislate the draft class he was a part of, but we had this conversation about him versus Ja'Marr Chase and the meme that was out there. I'm just saying the Lions decided to pay him first. I don't know if that makes him the winner or not, but it seems like picking... And again, it's all about skill sets and body types. There are not a lot of him walking the face of the earth right now. Ja'Marr Chase is a special player. You can find a lot more of those body types out there in the world. There are not a lot of 6'5", 6'6", 330-plus pound guys who move like a deer like that, who also give you receiver touches, oh, by the way, as we've seen in that offense. So I don't want to say that this is a total win for the beef community, but, man, it feels like we can call the fight now. Yep. That's all I'm saying.
I'm with you. They did what they needed to do. They're also a team, real quick, I know we're going to talk about them, hung on to their coordinators.
Yes,
They were head coaching candidates. So this is a team primed to make the next jump.
The meme where you can have O-linemen throwing to anybody there, not just anybody. Amon-Ra St. Brown, highly paid, well-deserved, absolute beef receiver, big O-line vibes for him. And so they are the class of this NFC North, Claudia, as we look ahead at the draft needs here for everyone else trying to play catch-up with the Lions right now, which is a funny thing to say.
Yeah, if you're looking at the other needs too, cornerback, receiver, edge, safety, tight ends on there. But if you guys are looking at the class heading into tonight, anybody that really stands out for you, senior?
I think for the Lions right here, I mean, looking for them, we'll go reverse order on this as we look at the North. They're the last pick, the 29th pick out of this division. And, Dad, they did lose one of the sneaky ones this offseason. We talked about O-line is the star of the show for Detroit. It's the way Dan Campbell's built that program. Jonah Jackson has been, I think, one of the most underrated players in the NFL the last few years. On a line that's got other stars, he was never going to be the first name. But losing out on him, sneaky a big one now. So at the end of that first round, I don't know if you'd go O-line there. Some people have them mock defense, still an area that I think opposite a guy, you know, like your former top overall pick, you want to still help out.
They picked up Zeitler, though.
They did pick up Zeitler, which is a big one.
To replace Jonah Jackson. Listen, this was a team that was 27th in pass defense, 23rd in sacks. I think they had 41, but they were 23rd in the league. I think they're going to go either edge rusher, maybe a Chop Robinson, maybe or a cornerback. Cornerback is going to be not as deep as it's been.
Sure.
As when we talked about it in last year's draft. But I think it will be on the defensive side, and I think it'll be one of those positions.
Yeah, smart to keep investing on that side of the ball there. You've made some strides, especially in the front seven. Now you got to pair it on the back end there as well. So I think they'll go defense there. As we take a look and start with the Bears, the number one overall pick. Caleb Williams is obviously a foregone conclusion at this point in most people's mind. We've talked about this team has done a good job of building up their roster over the last couple of years to get it into a much better place. Dad, that ninth pick overall, I think also most people look at that and assume, hey, that's probably couldn't, should be wide receiver, continue to add weapons around Caleb Williams.
I think you're going to get one of the top three, right? Between Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Roma Dunze. They may possibly be gone by then.
You game it out. Arizona at four, probably going to take the best of that group there. Most of the mocks have Malik Nabers going at six overall to the Giants. And then it's really, can you get through Tennessee, who, listen, you could argue still. I mean, they picked up wide receiver this offseason there. You still had DeAndre Hopkins as a holdover from last year. I doubt they're going to do it. Atlanta, there's no way they go offensive skill again in the top 10. They're chock full of it there. So you'd have a decent chance of having the third. And, man, if Roma Dunze falls to them, Chicago already feels like a team that's on the precipice of making that Houston Texans-like jump from last year. You throw Rome into the mix with Caleb, and that's a really potent cocktail.
I agree.
So the Vikings, I think, in most people's estimation, the most interesting team in this first round in terms of what they could do as a mover, that team everyone's had trading up. They've got the 11th pick and the 23rd pick overall in this draft. And we know this conversation starts with quarterback. Dad, do you ultimately think there's any way they walk out of the first round without a quarterback?
They're not going into the season with Sam Darnold as a starter.
Yeah.
Or if he is, it's a bridge. But they're a team, I think, that needs to get a quarterback and insert him in day one. Right, and just say, this is now your team. Because Sam Darnold got his second life. He was back in a Purdy out in San Francisco. Now going to Minnesota, I think that's going to be his lot, to be the backup Sam Darnold on the teams eventually if he goes to, with occasionally being that guy counted on to keep your team's head above water. I think they're going to have to go quarterback and insert that quarterback and give him the job right away.
Yeah, and I know we talked about it. There were mock drafts where, hey, we saw maybe they could wait at 11 and get J.J. McCarthy. I just think with Denver and Vegas lurking there, they're not going to be able to take that risk.
That's the risk, right? That's the roll of the dice.
Right, and yeah. I just don't think at that position you can take that.
Agreed.
Given where they're at right now, which is still have a chance to be competitive in the North. Like, it looks like a division that belongs to Detroit and Green Bay after last year. But if you're the Vikings, Justin Jefferson's contract hanging in the balance there, I don't think you can afford to take a massive step back. Because, man, if you were able to hold on to both these picks and you're at the end of that round, we know you sort of went wife swap at pass rusher with the way that you had Danielle Hunter out, but you bring in Jonathan Greenard from Houston as you guys basically swap partners there. But, man, if you could sit at that edge and add another edge rusher to that defense, that'd be great in that 23 pick range for one of those guys in this class to fall.
They still need help on defense. I just mentioned was the Packers who as far as is sacks. Oh no, the Lions at 41 sacks. Minnesota only had two more than that. So it's not like they were a sack happy machine either. So they need still some help on that D line too. So I think at that position they go for that edge as well.
Yeah, they do. But I just don't think they're going to have that 23rd pick to work with. I think they're going to have to package that up
if they're going to move up.
I just don't think they're going to be able to sit at 11 as great as that would be for them and walk out of this with the quarterback that they want, which is likely going to be J.J. McCarthy at this point. Everything we've seen is the lead up. Stranger things have happened on draft night, but at this point it does seem like that's where we're settling. The Packers at 25 overall becomes really interesting here. It seems like corner or offensive line, probably an area they go here. This has been an offensive line with a lot of versatile parts. They lose John Runyon this offseason that had been a part of that group as well. And so some people look at Tyler Guyton is a prospect I've had trouble mocking in the first round of my own. But I think in this system, in these Shanahan McVay guys with a big-time athlete like that, in a scheme that wants to get you on the move, get you running, use those skills. I think the scheme at Oklahoma didn't necessarily favor Guyton's gifts. I think this could be a really interesting landing spot if he makes it to 25.
As you mentioned, they lose Runyon. They lose Yosh Nyman, another old lineman. Obviously, Aaron Jones gone, but they did pick up Josh Jacobs from the Raiders. So this is a little toward the end of the round. You have talked about, especially a lot of the top old linemen. Here you mentioned Tyler Guyton, another guy, Amarius Mims. So what about him? You know, is he a fit there? These are some of the lineman names that are going down lower in the first round of how you differentiate between them.
Yeah, I Amarius Mims, of the guys towards the back half of the O-line draft that are tools-based and projections, because Amarius Mims just hasn't played a lot of football,
right.
Came into this year without a lot of starts, got injured early on. He's the one
You're
I feel
on
the most...
come there, right?
He's the one. There's not many 340 guys that have the tapered V-waist, but also technically are a little bit further along the most. I've said he's like this year's O-line Anthony Richardson, where the bones are there, he just needs more reps. He's not just a toolsy guy. Technique-wise, I don't think he's all that far off. So we're excited to talk about even more beef. Congratulations to Penei Sewell on the payday.
Yeah.
The NFC North going to be one of the most entertaining divisions in football this next season. But coming up next, we talk to one of the most entertaining people in football. ESPN's Mina Kimes stops by to look ahead at round one of the draft next on Gojo and Golic.